Okay, good morning. Good afternoon, good evening. It's Saturday morning here. Welcome wherever you are in the world to Free Association. This is Saturday morning ramblings, for want of a better title. I don't have anything to talk about on my show this afternoon. So I've just got to talk until I come up with something that I want to talk about for 20 minutes or half an hour or whatever. And I could talk about smart cities, but I don't know anything about smart cities as yet. Could talk about artificial intelligence. Don't really know anything about artificial intelligence either. Could talk a little bit about philosophy, but I don't really know that much about philosophy either. So I've got to a point where I feel like I don't know anything about anything and I don't want to talk. So I need to flip out of that, really, because I have to talk this afternoon. So it's not apathy. What is it? It's not apathy. Lack of confidence, maybe? Lack of confidence we'll go with. So, what do I need to do? Take out resistance, put in confidence, take out low self-esteem, put in confidence. Sounds like it's a more an emotional freedom technique session. So let's just do a little bit of that. So if I'm calibrating for emotional freedom technique on a scale of 0 to 10, where's my self-confidence level? About a 6 or 7, maybe. And it probably, if I'm going to talk for half an hour about something, and my self-confidence level needs to be at least a 9, I would have thought. Otherwise, I'll run out of things to say. So it needs to move up a little bit. So let me find a good position for this phone while I'm doing this session, which is probably here. So even though this is a setup statement, even though I feel like I don't know what I want to talk about, I wholly and completely love, honor, and accept myself. So even though I'm gonna struggle to find enough to say about smart cities and artificial intelligence to cover half an hour of a radio show this afternoon, I wholly and completely love, honor, and accept myself. I can feel the difference in my voice already. I've just cleared my throat a little bit and my voice is stronger, so I can feel it. I can feel it right now. So even though I might be talking shit for half an hour because I don't know that much about smart cities and artificial intelligence, I wholly and completely love, honor, and accept myself. And even though whatever comes out of my mouth might be nonsense or gibberish, I wholly and completely love, honor, and accept myself. There we go. That's probably enough to be going on because I can feel the difference. I'm hoping that recorded reasonably well. But that's how emotional freedom technique works. It's the affirmation plus the tapping and the calibration. So where am I now? Where's my voice now? My voice is probably at least an 8 now. So I've gone from a 6 to an 8 or potentially a 9, and that's enough. That's enough for me to not be worried about it. I can always just look something up or play a video or whatever. So I don't have to talk like I know what I'm doing, really. I can talk for 10 minutes And it's all about repetition ultimately. It's repeat the key thing. So say the key thing, play the video with the key thing in it, repeat the key thing, play another video, repeat the key thing again at the end. So three or four times at least, repeat the same key point. So what I really need to do is work out what my key point is for this afternoon. Find some videos that will reinforce it. And then we're off to the races. We're up and running. So that wasn't difficult, was it? It wasn't difficult at all. Now that I've got a format again in my head, and I'm going back to the 20-minute video format that I've been using for ages, but it works. It works. And yeah, if I can find something. Smart cities, artificial intelligence, data integrity, privacy, those types of issues, then that'll work for a show, work for an hour show with no trouble at all. So it depends what I find. Let's have a look on YouTube and see what we've got.
The city of the future is smart. It's entirely interconnected, will regulate traffic, save energy, fight crime, assisted by big data and the Internet of Things. Brave new world, or rather a surveillance nightmare. What could smart cities look like, and do we really want to live there? Our topic today on Shift. More than half of the world's population lives in cities, and this number is steadily rising, resulting in enormous challenges. More people, more traffic, more pollution, more energy consumption, more water usage, more waste. Smart cities are supposed to help cope with these problems. Projects are popping up everywhere, for instance, in Nigeria, South Korea, India, or Malaysia. A livable city that can think for itself. How does this work? Like this, for example.
Visions of the future. This is a smart city, as imagined by tech companies and urban planners. Regular streetlights are replaced by smart poles, which connect to other Internet of Things devices and provide broadband. Thanks to driverless cars, accidents hardly ever happen. And drones and robots deliver goods, even coffee. In this future city, salad grows underground at the urban farm. Augmented and virtual reality make processes more efficient. One example is that firefighters on duty can be assisted by the control center. And tech helps to find and correct system errors to prevent damage before it happens.
Sounds fantastic. But in order for these ideas to become reality, technical preconditions are essential. A central role falls to the new mobile communication standard 5G. It's the engine for the Internet of Things and enables interconnected infrastructures on a grand scale. An expert on smart cities is Jonas Böhm. He's a researcher at the Institute for Technology Management at the University of St. Gallen and has published a book with guidelines for cities that want to become smart. We wanted to know, how do I make a city smart? And why? We want to improve people's lives. That's how I would summarize the goal of a smart city. In order to do this, it's important for citizens to be able to properly explain what kind of city they'd like to live in. That's the starting point, and we can begin designing a smart city based on those demands.
Imagine you're the mayor of a city and want to turn it into a smart city. You'd have to consider the following. You need to make your city interconnected by adding sensors that collect data, for instance, to cars and streetlights, to be able to regulate traffic, or to measuring stations stationed throughout the town that measure pollution levels.
The smart city is usually a combination of the different urban systems that we have. For the most part, that means mobility systems, housing systems, administrative systems, energy systems, education systems, and so on. Anything affecting citizens in their everyday lives can be assigned a digital shadow.
Kann mit einem digitalen Schatten versehen werden.
But simply collecting data is insufficient. Big data is no end in itself. Data needs to be prepared and analyzed. Based on this, smart solutions for your city can be found. Street lights that only illuminate once someone is close. Or automatic driving restrictions when the air is heavily polluted. Anything is possible in your interconnected smart city.
To build a smart city, one must do three things. Connect devices, collect data, and assess this data to find solution for the citizens. But how do I benefit from the smart city? Here are some answers. In Santander, Spain, the city saves taxes by using resources more efficiently with the help of sensors. Public spaces are only irrigated when they're too dry. Garbage bins are only emptied once they're full. Helsinki, garbage trucks have become obsolete. Waste is transferred to underground collection points without noise or pollution. In Rio de Janeiro, a smartphone app is enabling residents to shape their surroundings. The app Smart Favela creates a three-dimensional avatar of the shanty towns. When city planners come up with new ideas, these can be looked at on the app, and then citizens can vote on them. In Palo Alto, in the U.S., parking lots now have sensors. These notify citizens whenever a parking space is free. The city's traffic is constantly recorded. Smart robocops are supposed to make Dubai safer. The police robots are equipped with cameras and can find persons through facial recognition tech. Reports can be filed on a touchpad. In Drahovich, Ukraine, citizens can view the incomes of civil servants and check on how politicians have voted in the city council. City-owned businesses lay bare their accounts using open data in the fight against corruption. Darmstadt, Germany, interconnected sensors assess the air quality and send this information to a data center, which analyzes air pollution and, if necessary, reports bad air quality. In order for these systems to work, vast amounts of data on all citizens are required. But who ensures that the data is safe? And who has access to it? Different solutions exist.
Data is essential for a smart city. It provides the basis for designing intelligent applications for the city. But what about data protection?
To be clear, in a smart city, there is no protection from data being collected. But on the other hand, it's precisely this data that provides the basis for implementing and controlling the city system. As a result, very careful and conscientious decisions need to be made regarding how the data is handled.
If the city controls data, this can be advantageous when it comes to data protection. But most cities lack the technical expertise to process and analyze the data. For this reason, many cities cooperate with big tech companies. They have the capacity and the algorithms needed to work with data masses. Like Google, Sidewalk Labs belongs to the Alphabet Corporation. It will construct an entire district of Toronto, with the newest technology, of course. But the data sovereignty stays with corporations like Alphabet, which is problematic as they use our data to make money.
An entire city's data naturally offers many opportunities. So what to do? Experts argue for so-called data utilities. These are publicly financed but independent organizations. They manage, process, and control access to data. Anyone interested in developing smart city solutions could use them, no matter if city-owned business, local startup, or big tech company. A promising approach. I think everyone should be able to profit from farmed data. In data utilities, personal data is anonymized. As a citizen, I cannot influence which data of mine is being used, though.
Decode, a project by the European Union, goes even further. It aims to empower individuals to control their data. Citizens themselves should decide whether personal information stays private or if it's being shared in order to make the city smarter. Pilot projects have been running in Amsterdam and Barcelona since 2018.
We believe that data should be understood as a public infrastructure, as a common good, like water, like electricity, like transportation, like the air we breathe.
They also believe that citizens can responsibly deal with their own data.
A desirable goal. Citizens should be in charge of their own data. Once private corporations or governments control data in the smart city, where do you draw the line when it comes to surveillance? An example from Shenzhen, China.
Taxi headquarters in Shenzhen, China. The red cars are occupied. The green cars are waiting for customers. Algorithms use ride histories to predict which areas are likely to have a lot of customers and when. Drivers can then directly head to these locations. Like Mr. Chen. His car is part of the network consisting of around 20,000 taxis in Shenzhen. And it's equipped with an interior camera, meaning the taxi headquarters can watch him work and listen in on all conversations.
In the beginning, I was uncomfortable as I didn't really know much about it and felt constantly observed. But actually, there's no reason for concern. The cameras protect the customers and us drivers too. And privacy is ensured, as not everyone can view the videos.
According to the taxi headquarters, all data is well protected and deleted after 72 hours. They say the system is great for educating drivers, and the footage can be used to settle conflicts or complaints. The taxi provider also says customers complain less frequently and that most like the cameras, as do drivers, who are now less worried about being threatened. But the police also has access to the videos. How freely will people really converse in the taxis?
Another problem. Smart street lamps, parking lot sensors, or garbage bins are connected to the internet and offer potential gateways for hackers. Theoretically, one weak link is all it takes to shut down the city's central servers. And cyber terrorists could go even further. Estonia demonstrates how to protect oneself.
In terms of digital administration, Estonia leads the way in Europe. Estonians can vote online and almost all public services are digitally accessible. But this also increases vulnerability. In 2007, Estonia was targeted by cyber attacks from a global network of connected bots, or botnet. Both online banking and government websites were affected. In response, Estonia has implemented annual international training on fighting attacks from hackers. They're organized by NATO's Cyber Defense Hub, and over 20 nations, the military and tech companies take part.
The question is not will you get hit with the cyber attack, the question is when you'll get hit with the cyber attack. Cyber security is not something you can do once, because the threat vector and threat landscape are changing every day.
Cyber security is also crucial for smart cities. They are becoming a steadily increasing economic factor. Tech companies use smart cities around the world to test their future technologies. The big question is, does this benefit the citizens? Two points are of importance to me. Who controls the applications and who owns the data? We need to find responsible solutions in the citizens' interest. What's your opinion? Would you like to live this way? How smart is your city? Join the discussion. I'm looking forward to your feedback. Bye for now, and see you next time.
Okay. So that was Smart City. How do you live in a smart city? Future Smart City Projects. That's the DW Shift channel. So I'm neutral, I think, on the idea of smart cities, because they're already happening anyway, so resistance is probably futile at this point. So the only thing we can do is to manage things and make sure everything's accountable. The only thing we can do is make sure that we're looking at it. So well, I know that Newcastle's going to be a smart city because every city in Britain is going to be a smart city at some point. And they're already putting the infrastructure in. They're making sure that the fibre's in the city centre to be able to do the monitoring and everything. So it's there anyway, whether we like it or not. So whether I give my data over to the city to be used as part of their planning process or not is the question, really. And there's a certain amount that I can do to, if I know where the sensors are, if I know where the cameras are, then I can choose to be in that place or not. And if I know where the 5G is and I know where the Internet of Things is running, then I can choose to be in that area or not. So that's one thing I can do. But once I'm in that area, then my movements and my whatever else is going to be captured for the city data, the management systems or whatever. So I think I'm neutral but resistant. I'm neutral on the idea because I think the idea could be potentially positive, but it depends how it's implemented and it depends how much accountability there is, really. So that's my issue with it. So on a practical level, I don't know whether I want to sit in council meetings and ask questions, but I might at some point. But I can potentially find out what the situation actually is and then respond to the real situation on the ground rather than jumping to conspiracy immediately. Let's just find out what the local situation is on the ground here and then I can respond appropriately to that. Because I'm not interested in fighting ghosts. I'm interested in fighting what's actually there, if it needs fighting. So I think that's probably, my stance on smart cities is keep a very close eye on them. But there's nothing we can do to stop it from happening, really, as far as I can see. The infrastructure's already going in. The Internet of Things has already been decided, so it's going to happen whether I like it or not. So all I can really do is keep an eye on it and make sure that if I participate in it, that I know where the data's going and what's happening to it. So I don't know whether that's enough. Maybe I'll find another video. I'll play one more video and then call it a day on this. Give me 2 secs. All right, this is Blockchain City, which is about 40 minutes long. 40 minutes might be too much, but it looks like it's worth watching. So
My name is Ian Khan. After meeting with hundreds of professionals, experts, industry influencers, and others through 2016 and 17, I found a severe need across the board to help figure out what the fuss was all about, what this new technology was all about, what blockchain was all about. Blockchain City is the true story of blockchain and the reality of how it impacts us all. As people, our cities, our workplaces, our families, and our future. Sometime after the year 2008, an entity or a group of people under the pseudonym of Satoshi Nakamoto came out with the famous white paper that highlighted a new electronic form of currency that would independently change everything about money. A new revolution had begun. Blockchain was the core technology foundation of this new currency, and this revolution has now culminated into a global phenomenon where governments, private and public sector firms are embarking on creating more value, more change, and solving some of the world's biggest problems. Of understanding this global movement to create more trust, secure our transactions, and create more value started in the city of Dubai. This is where the vision of tomorrow is driving an aggressive strategy of how technology can augment our capabilities. Follow me on this journey as I embark on a quest to find the truth from those who know best where we're headed. In the middle of the Arabian Peninsula, one of the most well-known cities is Dubai, a fast-growing metropolis and the epicenter of change in the Middle East. Dubai has always been synonymous with progress, challenging the status quo, and dreaming big. The government of Dubai, with its vision of tomorrow, powered by technology, has embarked on an aggressive plan to enable a blockchain-based government by 2020. The UAE also has a national plan to enable blockchain across all seven emirates by the year 2030.
Hear from technology, be smart on how to deal with these technologies. Doesn't matter if it is a blockchain or big data or any type of technologies, even our smart devices, as long as we know why we are using it. If you don't know how to use it, go and educate yourself. Make sure that you utilize the best of these technologies for your own benefit. We need to be wise enough to understand what these technologies will add value to my life. And for me personally, as long as it will make my life much simpler and much easier, I will go for it.
From manufacturing to logistics, transportation, healthcare, and real estate, every sector, every industry is set to undergo a radical shift in the next few years, potentially because of blockchain. Yet we do not understand blockchain to an extent where we could really be comfortable with it. To date, technology has been a domain of computer programmers, experts, and leaders alone. But just like blockchain promises democratization of technology, we need to break down the barriers to understand blockchain itself. We must find out what blockchain really is, and more than that, how it can be defined by what value it brings.
Blockchain is essentially a breakthrough in database technology. It's a new kind of database system that, because of its architecture, enables everybody on the system to trust the system.
It's a tool for decentralizing relationships, contracts, and decision making so that they aren't mediated by gatekeepers of various. various kinds. It's a very powerful idea.
If you use a little example here to make it a bit more illustrative to the viewers, you could think of a transaction which we all observe. So let's assume all the viewers here, which are watching us right now, would have a little black notebook on their lap and would kind of take notes of all the transactions they are seeing. And they are seeing right now a person here standing, which maybe not they are not familiar with, and that person is holding $20 in his hands. So you have super sharp eyes and you can see the ID and everything, and this is a legal token. So now you see that I give this $20 to this gentleman over here, which you don't know, but you have seen the transaction took place. Now you write this transaction in your little black notebook and calculate a little sum to that, and you add all the subsequent transactions to that. Now let's say in 5 minutes I'm saying, oh, wait a minute, that weren't $20, that were $100, and I want my $100 back. So all the people who are viewing this transaction, I would have now to convince that their transaction, which have been kind of jotted down in their little black notebooks, are not actually $20, but $100. Now, how would I do that, right? Because I don't know how many people actually have a ledger, have written down this transaction. And on top of that, I would have kind of pried my way through. I have to persuade them to change the entry. Why would they do that, right? Because they don't know me. There's nothing they can gain here. And in parallel, all the other transactions, which are ongoing because more people kind of do payments, they have to be jotted down as well. So they would be super busy, and that would be prohibitively expensive for me to do so. So economically, it doesn't make sense.
Despite the various explanations that blockchain is defined as, it's still hard to sometimes comprehend the actual technology. And for that, we must understand it beyond just its architecture. One of the most innovative and forward-thinking countries in the world is also one of the tiniest European nations, Estonia. Over the last 2 decades or so, Estonia has really laid the foundation of a digitally powered nation and is now reaping its rewards. Estonia is also considered to be a leader in blockchain, which in some ways is often a less represented fact.
Estonia kind of had blockchain databases before the term blockchain was coined, but I would have to say that Estonia is not a blockchain nation, so we don't run fully on blockchain. We just happen to be in a position where we created similar databases that are now referred to as blockchain technologies, and we use that in our people's registry and to run our state databases and systems.
One of the other benefits of blockchain is also mass collaboration and the ease of sharing information to create value. The Netherlands, with its Dutch Blockchain Coalition, is spearheading efforts to create global awareness and impact.
It's a missing piece to support collaboration between different companies, between different governments in a supply chain. It can help you to work together and to give you as a person a better user experience and make new things possible.
And yet, where would we be without really addressing the need for us humans to live a life of acknowledgement, respect, dignity, and value? Maybe blockchain can help us realize our true human potential.
For me, blockchain is going to help me become more me. It's going to celebrate my individuality. I feel like the IP of who we are and our ideas will have value and meaning, and I think that's going to be a huge shift.
The idea of blockchain being a radical new technology that can address many different challenges we currently face as people across the world is sometimes hard to accept. How can one technology, often confused with Bitcoin, have so many different applications? The answer may be similar to something we faced about 30 years ago with the mass commercialization of personal computing. Skeptics back then probably asked, how could computers be used in every profession? How can they increase productivity? How can microprocessors change the world? Today, we have overcome all of those questions as time has proved the value of computing technology beyond anything we could have imagined.
What then are some of the possibilities of blockchain, and how can we really use it beyond just financial transactions?
There are literally thousands of projects that people are building out: identity systems, reputation systems, governance tools, accounting systems.
For us, it was just the kind of financial benefit and the ease of actually accessing digital services or public services, that you don't have to go to the taxman and stay there for, you know, 2 hours and sign a piece of paper, that you could do it from your computer. It's just comfort, and it saves you a lot of time. Also, it saves you finances.
When we started the Smart Dubai initiative in 2014, we continued with this kind of research exercise to see what are the advanced technologies, emerging technologies that will take Dubai to its next level. You know that in Dubai we started digitization of our government in 2000. So we've been into like now almost two decades in digitizing our infrastructure. We know today whenever anyone talk about blockchain, they think about the financial sector. But we dig deeper.
What blockchain is enabling us is doing something like social goods. If you, for example, look into what the United Nations are doing, or the World Wildlife Fund, using the blockchain technology to prevent overfishing in the South Pacific, or to prevent children trafficking by using blockchain technology, then you can see that there are really kind of societal problems which can be addressed or are currently addressed in prototypes by blockchain implementations.
From efficiency to identity management, financial transactions, and more, there seems to be a vast range of applications.
We started as a publishers, and we saw the print media going down. We were trying to find the answers, you know, where it is going, what is the media future. So we were thinking that we need to give all the power to the authors, those who create the media, and we realized very quickly that there are so many inequalities in the world, and that without giving the ownership to those who really create the value in the economy, there would be no possibility to bring back the trust and create something that will disrupt these monopolies that are, you know, controlling the entire media space now.
Trust, democratization, and more. They also say that blockchain works as a tool for accountability, recording every transaction, an immutable, unalterable, and permanent record of things. This, in fact, helps with tracking information because it's always available on blockchain. Can industry benefit from this? Perhaps one of the big challenges that creative artists face can be solved with blockchain-related technologies.
So many examples of how it can change the music industry. I mean, a very simple example is you sign a contract with somebody for, say, a record deal or a publishing deal. It's all about percentages, and it's about at this point this happens, at this point this happens, this person gets paid when this is recouped. Anytime any artist has ever audited a label, they've always found money. So I think there's something in being able to digitize your contracts into smart contracts to help you interface with the services of the future. The biggest bugbears in the music industry that's failed time and time again is to try to create a verified, authorized global database of music, of songs, of repertoire. And it's failed time and time again because it's been about ownership. It's been about, this is mine, we're going to try and do this all to ourselves. But in opening that up and becoming an open database where people can author that and attribute their worth to that and potentially be a part of that payment in the future also, makes these things possible. I feel finally we can create a music ecosystem that is worthy of the music that we love.
Content creators can now be compensated for their hard work and finally fight the war with piracy, which costs the music industry billions of dollars every year. But can you and I, as content creators, benefit with a technology such as blockchain as well?
We
are putting the contents of Wikipedia plus an extra million articles that we've added to Wikipedia on the blockchain. What that means is that if somebody creates a new article and adds it to the database, they actually mine, by doing that, some tokens. We call them IQ tokens. What that means is that you become a co-owner. You have a financial stake in the creation and the quality of knowledge.
It seems like challenges within government, banking, finance, and even real estate could now have an answer to create a higher rate of return on efforts, work, and productivity in general.
One of our projects is to add efficiency in our reconciliation system between bank accounts. Normally, this kind of transaction take almost 45 days. And we thought by implementing blockchain, it will add 30 to 40% efficiency. But it gave us 100%. It dropped that time from 45 days to zero. So why not transferring this experience to the rest transactions in the government, whether it be internally, in our, for instance, HR transactions, procurement transaction, but also the transaction for the users. Why I should wait like for days or months to buy a house? Why it's not only like a matter of pressing a button?
Just imagine how complicated bureaucracies are, right? And translating that into code, which is what's required by putting those operations on the blockchain, sounds like a very tall order. There is a natural tension, actually, between government operations in general and the blockchain, because what the blockchain is disintermediating relationships between individuals.
Okay, that's enough of that particular video. Get the idea. I'm still not sure. I'm not 100% in favor, and I'm not 100% against. I'm still just not sure. Until I see the implementation, I'm not going to know whether I like it or not. And until I see the implementation, I'm not going to know how much there is of concern or how easy it'll be to examine it properly, or whatever needs to happen. If I have to stand up in a council chamber and ask questions, then I'll do that. But until I see the implementation, there's nothing to ask questions about. So I think I'm just going to stay neutral for the time being and keep my eyes on things. So that's pretty much it. It was a good show for what it was. Considering I didn't know what I was going to be playing, it's turned out quite well. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you again next time.